SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello and welcome to a Wednesday Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination and consume everything all across the grid. I am Ben Stevens. He is Donnie Wrightside. We are together here for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time to get you set for everything you need to know around the sports landscape. We have big news out of the National Football League in the coaching ranks for teams looking to run it back and get back to the pinnacle next season. Of course, now we continue the tracker and the countdown 11 days until Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. We go around the association, 10 more games on this Wednesday, and a bunch of upsets last night in men's college basketball. All of that and more over these next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
Wednesday, hump day here, designed to get you through the later part of the week. But we do, Ben, have a lot of information to go over, which also, as you talked about, the head coaching cycle in the NFL, which looked like it was one of the best crops of coaches you could have picked from. And now you see the final results as we come to the finish line. It doesn't look like all that great outside of one hire here. Amazing stuff in the NFL happens, and particularly with these head coaches that who are accepting and not accepting jobs in the NFL.
It might be the coaches that are staying put that actually bring more of the headlines. Still two head coaching vacancies around the NFL that we will detail for you in just a moment. But we start in the association, the Golden State Warriors, last night at home in San Francisco. No Tyrese Maxey on the other side for Philadelphia, but Joel Embiid did play in the game against the Dubs. However, he left the game early with a knee injury. We welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience quickly here before we dive into the scores and the recaps. It's Sirius XM channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold as well. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Welcome to a Wednesday on the Early Line. The Golden State Warriors pick up a much needed win at home, 119-107. The Dubs cover as a 3-point home favorite. No Tyrese Maxey for Philly, Donnie. And maybe no Joel Embiid for the next few games. He leaves early after falling on the floor and clutching his knee. The Dubs win 119-107, but the big takeaway might be the status of the reigning NBA MVP moving forward.
Yeah, he got 30 minutes last night. It was clear that he wasn't healthy, but also the pressure of him getting back on the court to try to win another MVP because of a certain games management system that the NBA has placed in. That's where the trouble lies. But maybe this is a blessing in disguise for the Sixers, where he can actually sit out a few weeks here or take his time and play you normally his schedule of the past couple years, not worrying about making sure you have 65 games played. I thought the Sixers would lose last night. They were on a back-to-back there, and Golden State was rested and at home. So I wasn't surprised by that. But again, getting back to the Philadelphia 76ers, maybe this is a good thing that Joel Embiid is going to be down for some time so he can rest and get healthy for the playoff run.
Steph goes off for 37 points. The Warriors still 4 games below 500, but get their 20th victory of the season. Again, much needed last night. But Joel Embiid entered the game a co-favorite to win the NBA MVP award. He is now not even listed in the odds board on the FanDuel Sportsbook. That is how dramatic the 65-game minimum can be. We saw Tyrese Haliburton return last night for Indiana against Boston. We'll get into his comments following the game against the Celtics in terms of that 65-game minimum around the NBA. The hottest team right now in the association, the New York Knicks, make it 8 straight victories for New York, 118-103 last night at home against the Utah Jazz. The Knicks now 20-9 against the spread as the favored side. They won 14 of 16 games in January, and 14 of 16 games stay under. That's Tibbs basketball, baby.
It is Tibbs basketball. Also, Dante DiVincenzo basketball, who I was talking about yesterday. I'm like, man, he played close to 40 minutes. He's going to expect to play 40 minutes again the next night in the Garden on a back-to-back. Didn't matter. Drains 9 triples in that game, en route to 33 points in that game, and an easy victory for the Knicks. The short-handed Knicks are pounding teams off back-to-backs now. My goodness, Tibbs has his team going in the right direction.
A 14-2 mark in January. The Knicks covered in 13 of those 14 victories. Now to college basketball, where North Carolina, the number three team in the country, was one of the hottest all around the country. 10 straight wins, a perfect 9-0 start in ACC play. That came crashing down last night in Atlanta. The Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets pull off the stunner, winning outright as an 8.5-point home underdog, thanks to Nathan George layup with 7.7 seconds remaining in regulation. The game winner, the Yellow Jackets win 74-73.
Close games on the road. What do you have to do, Ben, to win those? Obviously play some good defense, but kids, just make your free throws here. North Carolina, 52.9% from the field. How about Georgia Tech? Excuse me, from the free throw line. How about Georgia Tech, 88%? Simple as that. You lost by one, didn't make your free throws. Another team did, but that's a stunning upset nonetheless.
UNC 9 of 17 from the charity stripe last night, despite a game-best 28 points from R.J. Davis, who is playing like an All-American in the ACC Player of the Year. So a stunner on the road for North Carolina, a stunner on the road for South Carolina, a 13.5-point underdog. The Gamecocks go into Knoxville and upset number 5, Tennessee, a huge victory for Lamont Paris and South Carolina, 63-59. The Gamecocks win outright as a 13.5-point dog on the road.
First of all, you're not going off a top 10 team, but you know what's even more impressive? You shot 33% from the field. We're talking about the Gamecocks here and won that basketball game. That is outrageous here. And how about Dalton Connect? You go out in the basketball game, say, I'm going to score over 50% of my team's points, and it still wasn't good enough to get that victory. Big-time win for the Gamecocks. I don't know how they won based on those scenarios and statistics, but they did.
Year number 2 under Lamont Paris. South Carolina now has been booked as an underdog 9 times this season. They are 8-1 against the number, winning outright in 7 of those 9 games. Keep an eye on the Gamecocks down there in Columbia. The stunner yesterday in the NFL coaching carousel that we will go in depth with later on in this show. Ben Johnson, who we all assume would be an NFL head coach entering 2024's campaign, is staying in Detroit as the offensive coordinator of the Lions. He says no to Washington. He says no to Seattle. He is staying as the OC under Dan Campbell in the Motor City.
This is a huge win for the Detroit Lions, but we do have to get to the bottom of what is actually taking place here, where an organization basically picked you as the head coach, waited out the playoffs, got on a plane with probably multiple people of the ownership group and front office, and mid-flight was told, I don't really even feel like giving this interview. I'm going to stay in Detroit. Something's up in Detroit, which I can't figure out, but that's a big win for Jared Goff and that offense.
We will detail it all later on the early line. Arthur Smith, who spent the past 3 seasons as the head coach in Atlanta, now the new offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh for the Steelers. Again, plenty more in coaching news and conversations coming later in the show. John Angelos is selling the Baltimore Orioles for $1.725 billion. The Orioles might be under new ownership very soon. Around the Association, up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A big Tuesday night around the Association. We recap here live on a Wednesday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. So the big news last night in San Francisco. No Tyrese Maxey for a 3rd consecutive game for Philadelphia, but Joel Embiid was back in the lineup for the 76ers after missing a contest over the weekend in Denver against Nikola Jokic. We thought that was going to be the MVP matchup between the Joker and JoJo. It wasn't. Embiid back last night with a listed points prop of 37.5. The main takeaway, though, despite a Golden State 12-point victory in San Francisco last night, is probably on the guy that left the game early, Joel Embiid, clutching his left knee. We're not sure the significance, but Joel Embiid, who has already missed 11 games this season, might be out for the foreseeable future. So let's go in parts, Donnie, starting with Philadelphia. Then we'll get to a much-needed victory for the Dubs. Without Joel Embiid, what does this do for Philly moving forward, and what might it do to the NBA MVP race?
Yeah, it's probably going to knock him out of the MVP race, but it may be, again, as I said to open the show, a blessing in disguise for the Philadelphia 76ers, because if you are an MVP caliber player, you do want to hold up your end of the bargain and say, man, I can do something not very many people have done in this sport, and that's win a back-to-back MVP. And currently, right now, I am the favorite to do so as long as I get my 65 games in, even if it comes at the detriment of what that playoff run will be. When you do historic things, you allow it to be up to the player in some of those instances. Sure, he has to be medically cleared, Ben, to get out on the court, but there's also something to be said about a player going like, you know what, I'm not in the MVP race, it's not that big of a deal, you know what, let me sit another two games to make sure my knee is right. When if you read the press clippings, like, hey, I have 38 games left, I can only miss three more games, I got to play in these games, and Joel Embiid gave it his best shot. Because if you watch that basketball game, there were several instances where Joel Embiid looked like he just wasn't healthy there. The one saving grace might be is the way he got injured in that game. So many times you try to equate it, Ben, like to if you take a look at the NFL, like, okay, I'm going to run a route and I just go down on a cut. It's like, oh, that's bad news for the knee. Joel Embiid didn't go up for a dunk or land awkwardly on that knee. He was laying on the ground and Jonathan Kuminga actually jumped on him for a loose ball and banged into his knee. So it might be one of those pain threshold things as opposed to ligament damage. But again, I'm not a doctor. I just look at it and say, like, how bad could this injury possibly be? But if it was a banged up knee and you made it a little bit worse, maybe he's going to sit a little bit more down the stretch. And again, that's good for the Sixers. You don't win an NBA championship in the regular season by getting the MVP for your player. You saw that last year in the Sixers, still a quick exit in the playoffs. Maybe this year you don't have the MVP, but your great player is healthy once the playoff comes around.
30 minutes for Embiid last night, just 5 of 18 from the floor, only 14.7 boards, did have 8 turnovers. He did look pretty hobbled last night in San Francisco. So as we go to the NBA MVP odds, you will not see Joel Embiid listed anymore on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Nikola Jokic now moves to an odds-on minus money favorite at minus 125. It would be the third NBA MVP award for the Joker in the last 4 NBA seasons. Think about where we were, though, just over a week ago after a 70-point performance from JoJo. He became the favorite, plus 125, to win the NBA's most valuable. Meanwhile, Philadelphia has lost 4 straight games because the Cavs and the Knicks are red hot at the moment. Philly has fallen all the way to the 5 spot in the Eastern Conference. Golden State, meanwhile, 12-point victory at home, led by Stephen Curry, who scores 37 points, hits 8 triples, and the Dubs cover as a 3-point home favorite. It was a game that Golden State desperately needed, Donnie, and one they got.
Yeah, and by the way, only got 13 points off the bench here, so it was really star-laden and superstar lineup here that got it done. You take a look, of course, Steph Curry with that 37 points. You have Kuminga getting 26 points, which is a nice addition there, helping out on that bottom line. I'm still not believing in the Golden State Warriors. Yes, they needed that win, but everything was set up in their direction, right? No Tyrese Maxey for the Philadelphia 76ers. And B coming back didn't know what to expect. You also had a game that you played 3 days previous in Los Angeles that you lost, so you were rested and ready, waiting on the Philadelphia 76ers in a back-to-back environment. They were supposed to win that basketball game, and quite frankly, it was interesting that that line goes from like 4.5 down to 3.5 around game time at some outlets here, but that was an easy win for Golden State, and it was apparent once that game got underway that Embiid wasn't going to be fully 100%, and without Maxey, what did you expect here? Of course, a Sixers loss.
Golden State wins by 12. They get to an even 500 at home. 13-13 straight up. Now 7-13 against the number, booked as the favored side at home. The best team that has been booked as a favorite all year long, who has been a favorite 15 or more times, that's the New York Knicks. 20-9 now against the number. A 15-point win inside Madison Square Garden. The Knicks in the month of January go 14-2. They cover in 13 of those 14 games. They go under in 14 of their 16 games in January. Tom Thibodeau is smiling. The Knicks are playing great basketball. They've won 8 straight. New York, the hottest team in the association.
Yeah, OG Anunoby and also Julius Randle not playing on a back-to-back. I told you yesterday, I like the Utah Jazz, not because I thought they were a good basketball team, but they were also on a back-to-back along with the Knicks, but already in New York City. And you know the Knicks are already down, again, two really good basketball players, and had to use up a lot of those players the night before. And then Dante DiVincenzo plays 39 minutes in this game, drops 33 points. Jalen Brunson goes for 38 minutes in this game, as well as Hart at 43. So these guys were playing a ton of minutes and still winning, and winning going away. This is a great sign for the New York Knicks here when they're not even full tilt, but still the hottest team in the NBA. Could have been very easy for those two starters to be knocked out of the lineup, and the Knicks hopefully to stay around 500 at that point. And it looks like they're going to hit the gas pedal and continue winning games. That's a good sign for the New York Knicks, 31-17 on the season and not even full strength.
Is there any stat line that Tom Thibodeau might love more than what Josh Hart did last night? 43 of 48 minutes, 10 points, 10 boards, 10 dimes, effort and resilience. That is Tom Thibodeau basketball. Now we go to Boston, where the best team in the NBA resides. That's the Celtics. A 5-point win at home in a really good game against the Indiana Pacers, who welcomed Tyrese Halliburton back to the fold. The Celtics win 129-124 inside TD Garden. Make that a 22-2 straight up record at home in Beantown this year. Booked as a favorite in every game. Boston closed as an 8-point favorite last night against Indiana. They do not cover, but they do win by 5 over the Pacers.
Yeah, if I would have liked to have the crystal ball to this game, Ben, as we were trying to figure out who was actually going to play, was Porzingis going to be back in the lineup, and how much would he play? He was back in the lineup, did well, played over 30 minutes. But also, the key contributor for the Pacers was Tyrese Halliburton. How long was he going to play, and how effective would he be? Is he going to come back and be 35, 36 minutes and put up his normal tempo play? No, he wasn't there last night. 22 minutes in the starting lineup here, scoring 13 points. So sort of feeling him back into the process. But also, the Indiana Pacers still covered that basketball game. But good thing for the Celtics, who had back-to-back losses on their home court, responding here, now improving to 37-11 on the season and 22-2 at home. That's a good win for the Celtics, but for the Pacers, we're just waiting for Halliburton to get back to 100% and play his normal minutes.
Listen, one thing that Tyrese Halliburton was able to contribute to last night was a higher tempo and pace for Indiana. A total that closed at 246.5 goes over in the games that Tyrese Halliburton missed. 7 of the 9 went under for Indiana. And the Pacers have been really good covering numbers as an underdog, 17-10-2 against the spread. They asked Tyrese Halliburton, who, if he misses 3 more games this year, will not meet that 65-game minimum and miss out on potential all-pro team consideration in the NBA, which comes with huge contract incentives, about that 65-game minimum and the new rule in the NBA. He called it, quote, stupid. And we are seeing that here for both Halliburton and Joel Embiid. No Anthony Davis last night for the Lakers. LeBron James plays on the second leg of a back-to-back, and the Hawks get a victory and a cover, covering as a 6-point home favorite. Donnie, one of the first covers for the Hawks in a long time.
I liked it last night because the Lakers, again, coming off that back-to-back, the Hawks were rested. They pounded them, scored 138 points. And again, LeBron James plays in a basketball game and a lot of minutes, and they don't win. What are the Lakers doing here, Ben? My goodness.
The Hawks 12-35 now against the spread. Still by far the worst cover record in the NBA. College basketball next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Chaos in college basketball. Now on the final day of January, the second to last night of the month, featured madness that we often see in the month of March. We start in the ACC with North Carolina. On the road yesterday, the number 3 Tar Heels, a perfect 9-0 in ACC play. Carolina had won 10 straight games entering last night in Atlanta. We know it is very difficult to win on the road in conference play. But UNC was booked as an 8.5-point favorite against a Georgia Tech team that was 2-7 in the ACC, losers of 3 in a row entering last night. But that is the beauty of college basketball, that each and every night crazy things can happen, as we saw in the ATL. Nathan George, a layup just under 8 ticks remaining in regulation. The game-winning shot for Damon Stoudemire and Georgia Tech. 74-73. The Yellow Jackets upset North Carolina and went outright as an 8.5-point underdog.
The ultimate equalizer in college basketball, as we know, is the three-point line, Ben. Take advantage of it, and your opponent doesn't, you have a leg up in that game. Even though Georgia Tech, I don't think many people saw this upset coming a mile away. 28% from the three-point line for the Carolina Tar Heels, matched up with 45% from the three-point line for Georgia Tech. That keeps you in there. And also, not getting those free throws that we like to call, right? 9 of 17 for the free throw line for UNC, not good enough. Get 52%, then you flip it back over there to Georgia Tech, who shot 88% from the free throw line. In a close game, you lose the three-point battle and the free throw battle, you're probably going to lose the game, particularly going on the road. That's a bad loss for the Tar Heels. But I tell you right now, down on Tobacco Road, the Duke Blue Devils standing up right now at attention going, you know what? That's a nice loss there for those Tar Heels. Let's see if we can go track them down now.
You know what's going to be pretty fun is that rivalry between Carolina and Duke on Saturday, the first rendition this year in the Dean Dome in Chapel Hill. It will be the 49th time that UNC and Duke face off as top 10 opponents. No other college basketball rivalry or even individual matchup has been top 10 more than 20 times, and it is 49 times that UNC and Duke will face off as top 10 foes. Duke won on the road on Monday night in Blacksburg against Virginia Tech. UNC suffers their first conference loss in the ACC, still 9-1. A 10-game win streak for Carolina entering last night, in which the Tar Heels covered in 9 of the 10. Georgia Tech, though, able to win outright. They have won 3 times against a top 25 foe at home this year. Mississippi State in non-con play early on in conference action against those Duke Blue Devils, and last night against Carolina. They are now an underdog in 7 of 9 ACC of their last 9 ACC games, 3 and 4 both straight up and against the spread. North Carolina, by the way, under in 8 of its last 9 games. So a shocking upset in Atlanta. Georgia Tech pulls off the stunner, prevailing past UNC 74-73. We go from North to South Carolina, but the Gamecocks were on the road in Knoxville, singing Rocky Top all night long. A stunner in Knoxville. South Carolina wins outright 63-59 as a 13.5-point road favorite against number 5 Tennessee, who entered riding a 4-game win streak. But Donnie, we talked about Lamont Paris with John Rothstein yesterday. Year number 2 in Columbia, leading the South Carolina men's basketball program. This year, there is not a better underdog team in the country. The Gamecocks now 8-1 against the spread as a dog. They have won outright in those 9 games as a dog 7 times.
Yeah, it's interesting how the early season schedule does set up for some of these ball clubs, because you take a look at it, Tennessee, top 5, supposed to easily dispatch of South Carolina as a double-digit favorite. But you look over at South Carolina, and if you want to use similarities to Georgia Tech, it was like, hey, look at that. Georgia Tech, we didn't expect them to win as an underdog at home against a much better team here, but they won that basketball game and say, oh, look at that, 2-7 in the conference, now 3-7 in the conference. That's an interesting victory. But you flip it over to South Carolina, Ben, like, it's not as if we didn't see this coming. They're now 18-3 on the season and 6-2 in conference play. Yeah. This wasn't a middling conference team that had one win in conference play on the season and somehow went on the road to beat Tennessee. But the crazy part about this game, as I keep bringing up, is it's very rare to go knock off a top 5 team in their own building when you shoot 33% from the floor. It almost doesn't even compute, but that just lets you know the gamesmanship of the Gamecocks, playing very good defense and almost playing that same style that Tennessee likes to play and usually puts you away. You tell me before the game, South Carolina goes on the road and shoots under 35%, they're going to get whitewashed and probably only come away with 38 points for themselves, let alone 63 and beating Tennessee 63-59. Maybe now the South Carolina Gamecocks can actually enter into the AP top 25. Wouldn't that be nice for once here? 6-2 in conference play, 18-3 overall. About time to get some respect.
Have to. Yeah. have to be ranked inside the top 25 next week when the new AP poll is released. Quality victories for Lamont Paris and his team. Wins over Kentucky and Tennessee in the last 2 weeks. The first win for South Carolina men's basketball against an AP top five team on the road since 1997. And oh, by the way, a total of 134.5. Given that defensive effort last night from South Carolina, does stay under. And if you would have said Dalton Connect scores 31 points for the Vols, I would have asked by how many points did Tennessee cover as a 13.5 point favorite, but he scored 31 of the Volunteers, 59 in total. The SEC is going to be a wild league to follow here down the home stretch of conference play. Auburn has dropped two straight on the road. Tennessee now a loss at home, which does not happen often. They are co-favorites in the SEC at plus 210. Alabama only 10 cents behind at plus 220. In Kentucky, an 8-1 number. Before things fall off to South Carolina at 26-1, but the Gamecocks are going to have some tiebreaker advantages over both Tennessee and Kentucky to end out this season.
Yeah, no, it's fun to watch here. And also the SEC, we always talk about as a football conference, taking that next level up. This is one of those teams, again, showing the depth of the conference that maybe we didn't know entering into the season. And just getting back to that point, they have a stellar record here to not be ranked in the top 25, particularly in a Power 5 conference. But they'll start being noticed now. Nobody's going to take them lightly the rest of the way in the ACC, as maybe they can end up into the driver's seat in the SEC, which is pretty impressive.
I thought we had those SEC title odds in the regular season. Maybe not. We go to the Big 12 now, though. Oh, there they are. Here they are. Let's show them just so the people know them. There they are. Plus 210, Auburn and Tennessee. A Texas top 25 tilt last night in Fort Worth. We're the best team in the Big 12. Texas Tech entered with a 5-1 conference record, but TCU, following a triple overtime win on the road against Baylor this weekend, was looking to keep good things rolling. The Horned Frogs, a 4.5-point home favorite against Texas Tech, hand the Red Raiders only their second loss in conference play, 85-78. TCU and Jamie Dixon cover as a 4.5-point home favorite.
Texas Tech lost this basketball game, Ben. We're going to go over this in a second. But obviously, you saw one of those numbers we talked about yesterday. We see this all the time. 25th ranked team going up against a 15th ranked team. Best team in conference play, Texas Tech. Oh, they're favoring this game. No, they're not. It's TCU minus 5.5. And they did win and cover. But let's get the crystal ball out, Ben, and have some fun in this basketball game. Hey, Ben, you know what? This game isn't over, but I'm going to tell you. You're going to go on the road as Texas Tech and shoot over 50% from the floor as a team. You're also going to shoot exactly 50% from three-point range. And that doesn't mean you went, Ben, 2-4 from three-point range. They went 14 of 28 from three-point range, shot over 50%, as I said, as a team from the floor, and still lost this basketball game, which shows how impressive that win for TCU actually was and the depth that this conference has. And we weren't surprised when we saw that spread that TCU was favored here at home, because as we keep saying, no, in those upper-level, you know, Power 5 conferences, it's so hard to win on the road, and it is a bloodbath on a night-to-night basis in the Big 12 when top-ranked teams go on the road and get upset, when it wasn't even an upset yesterday. Because as we said, forget about the ranking. TCU was favored by close to 6 points in this game. But that's a crazy way to lose when you go back to the tape and say, yeah, we should have played better defense, but my goodness, how did we lose with these offensive statistics here? Watch out in the Big 12 here. But that's a nice win by TCU that gets them back in the race in the Big 12 for the regular season.
TCU has won 7 of their last 9 games now, and they have covered in all 7 of those victories. There was one of those spots as well, Donnie, because TCU was also ranked. So to lay 4.5, 5 points at home, not all that surprising. K-State, the unranked team against an Oklahoma side that dropped both of its games in the previous week, was a 2.5-point, 3-point home favorite in the Little Apple against Oklahoma last night. The Sooners won by 20 on the road outright as a short underdog. Villanova was also an unranked home favorite against a ranked team last night, laying 1.5, minus 115 on the money line against Marquette. But if you're going to make Marquette an underdog, you got to know what you're getting yourself into. 4-0-1 now against the spread for the Golden Eagles as the underdog. All 4 of those covers, an outright victory. It was very short last night. Marquette had a 17-point lead over Villanova. The Cats made things interesting, but the Golden Eagles do win in Philly 85-80.
Yeah, going on the road and shooting 45% from three-point range, 10 of 22 for Marquette. But you can't do this. If you're looking to make your way in conference play with the Big East and Marquette being one of the better teams, you know what you can't do, Ben? Go down 11-0 to start the game in your own gym here. That's a recipe for disaster, not success. It's a good win by Marquette on the road against the Cats.
Villanova now just 11-10 in year number two of Kyle Neptune. The Cats have lost five straight games. They have only covered once in this five-game skid. Now to the National Football League. The fallout from the postseason up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Wednesday on the early line on Sports Grid, we look at the postseason aftermath because now there are only two teams left in the 2023 NFL season in the hunt for that Lombardi Trophy. Of course, it's the two teams facing off on Super Bowl Sunday in just 11 days, the Chiefs and the 49ers. But Donnie, each and every step around this season, whether it was at the end of the regular season, the 18 teams that did not qualify for the postseason, looking at where their season stood, how you would describe what we saw in 2023 and what was ahead, or the six teams following Super Wild Card Weekend, the four teams following the divisional round, or the two teams last weekend on Conference Championship Sunday that had their seasons come to a close. It's a reset. It's a look back. It's also a look forward. Yesterday, we spent a ton of time on the Detroit Lions. What was next for Dan Campbell? Probably have to fill an offensive coordinator position. We were wrong. Ben Johnson is staying in the Motor City, as we will discuss in just a little bit. But Donnie, we didn't really look at the AFC title game. We do that today. And there are going to be questions about Lamar Jackson. At the highest level, on the most significant stages, can he win the biggest games? Not a big game in the regular season, not play against the best, not put up the stats that leads to an MVP season. Can he win at the highest level in the National Football League? And right now, the record would say no. A 2-4 playoff record for Lamar Jackson following the 17-10 defeat in Baltimore on Sunday in the AFC Championship game. It was Lamar's first AFC Championship game in his career, and he comes up short and at times looked a little bit shaky on Sunday afternoon against Kansas City. There is the narrative behind what we discuss. Do you think that narrative surrounding Lamar Jackson and his disappointments in the postseason continues to grow into 2024?
It's a good place to start here because there's a lot of, you know, layers of this onion that we're going to peel back during this segment here on the Ravens. And quite frankly, we could probably do 3 hours on the Ravens themselves and then in the NFC Championship game do 3 hours on Detroit. Like yesterday, we had a great segment here going over what happened there. But let's start with Lamar Jackson. Like, I'm a big cheerleader for Lamar Jackson, but let's start out coming into the NFL. I wasn't sure that he was going to be a great NFL quarterback because what we saw in college football doesn't always translate. We see record-breaking performance. Like, why isn't Jimmy Chang in the Hall of Fame for being, you know, the most yards in the history of the NFL? Because we know some things don't translate from college football into the NFL, and rightfully so. But Lamar Jackson won a Heisman there, came in a little bit more cachet, first-round pick, and came in and took the NFL by storm, winning an MVP within his first couple years of the NFL. So we said to ourselves, okay, no playoff success, but still a young player. He'll eventually get it together. He's still young in the process of his NFL career, but what we do know he does better than everybody else is run, and usually that slows down. But let's remove that even from the equation and just focus on this year, which I thought he was the MVP, which means the best overall football player in the NFL on one of the best teams in the NFL, and the expectations were extremely high. Now, hear me out on this thought process behind it, Ben. You take a look in college football. Let's use that for a prospect. Like, you play Navy, you play Army. When do you want to play them? after your bye week. I don't even care if you're Clemson or Alabama. You want a week or two to get in there and say, you know what, let's slow this down. Make sure you stay on your P's and Q's. You tackle the fullback on every play. You have the quarterback and you have the wing back here, and you can practice it multiple times. You say, well, Donnie, why does that equate to Lamar Jackson? Now, hear me out. In the NFL, it's not like, well, you want to play the Baltimore Ravens after a bye to defend Lamar Jackson. No, but you have so many more things swirling around in a regular season, from future scouts to game plans to the next couple weeks, what you have to worry about on a day-to-day basis here. And for Lamar Jackson in the regular season, that works well for him because you just can't say, hey, weeks ahead, we're going to get ready for the Baltimore Ravens. No, you got to worry about game to game to game. But when you get into the playoffs where every possession means more and defensive coordinators and defensive staffs are locked in on just Lamar Jackson because there is no future and you don't know who your future players are going to be, or should I say teams you're going to play against, it just seems like it catches up to Lamar Jackson in the biggest moments. And then I'm not even blaming him for Sunday. I put more blame on Monken, the offensive coordinator, than Lamar Jackson. Yeah. But we're focused on Lamar right now. You can't tell me this stuff. Well, the Ravens, you know, they should have run the football. That's what they do. If you are an MVP quarterback, Ben, I don't give a damn if you're running the football or throwing the football. You're still supposed to be the best player on the field. So if Lamar Jackson has to drop back 40 times, you know what I expect? 375 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions, because that's how good he is. But in the biggest moments, we don't ever lean back and say, well, Patrick Mahomes, man, I wish they would have ran the football more because their offense isn't built for that. Stop the madness here. Lamar Jackson in the biggest moments hasn't stepped up. Maybe he will in the future, but that narrative that we're talking about for the past couple years, Lamar can't win in the playoffs, it's open season on it right now, Ben, because apparently in the biggest games, he can't win those games.
And there were a lot of people that did question the offensive scheme, the game plan for Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens offensively on Sunday in first-year OC Todd Monken's first-ever AFC Championship game with the flock. It was certainly an interesting couple of decisions in terms of how they tried to attack a Kansas City team that was top five defending the pass, but bottom half of the league defending the run. For a Baltimore team outside of Lamar Jackson that was really good running the football this year, to run it only 16 times despite averaging greater than 5 yards per pop, and Lamar Jackson had 8 carries for 54 yards, it was an interesting design, to say the least. But 20 of 37, Lamar Jackson threw the air on Sunday for 272 yards. Those 37 pass attempts, the second most this season for Lamar Jackson, regular season or playoffs. Not a great completion percentage, and of course that incredibly costly interception, that call a spade, was flat out horrendous. Throwing into triple coverage exactly where the Chiefs wanted him to put the football, just because Isaiah Likely had half a step on his defender for just about a split second, and Deion Bush made the interception in the end zone that really sealed the deal for Kansas City, setting the Chiefs back to their fourth Super Bowl in the last 5 years. It's a 2-4 playoff record now for Lamar Jackson, who became the starter for the most part at the end of the 2018 NFL season for the Ravens. When he has started games, and of course the previous 2 years entering 2023, Donnie, he had only played 12 games, but when he has started, the Ravens are 58-19. That is a better win percentage even than Kansas City under Patrick Mahomes. Baltimore as a team, a 66-33 record straight up since Lamar entered the league back at the start of the 2018 NFL season. That is the second best regular season record in the NFL in this span, only behind the Kansas City Chiefs. But they've only won 2 playoff games. They've only made the AFC Championship game once. And of course, they have not played in a Super Bowl since 2012. Those will be the questions that Baltimore has to answer and shore up and change the narrative behind as the Ravens get ready to be a contender once again in the AFC in 2024.
Yeah, and they will be a contender again, and they're going to have a high team total next year, and the expectations are going to be even higher because they'll probably just cut Odell Beckham, who had that $15 million here, spend it more wisely on a better wide receiver that can help you in the passing game. But we're going to see Lamar Jackson be an unbelievable regular season quarterback as long as he's healthy. And you're right. You bring up those statistics here on the win-loss percentage. A lot of that has to do with Lamar Jackson being a dominant quarterback in the regular season. But the same thing is going to happen next year. The Baltimore Ravens be a 1, 2, 3, or 4 season. seed here. Maybe they win the division. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're a 5 or 6. Once they get to the playoffs, we'll all say the same thing. Hey, look, the Ravens are playing so-and-so this weekend. You go, like, yeah, there's a really good chance Lamar Jackson won't play well, so I can't trust him. It's tough that we do that on what's going to be a two-time MVP. You're never supposed to do that. But that initial point I brought up, coming into this playoffs again, when you were going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, there was two thought processes in place. We know Patrick Mahomes is going to play well. We just hope that Lamar Jackson plays well. You shouldn't have that. But again, next year in the playoffs, when they approach, I'll have that same thought process. Man, the Ravens are really good. I just hope Lamar Jackson doesn't implode, which is ridiculous. But that's where we're at.
Listen, you are evaluated at the quarterback position at the highest level in the National Football League based on your postseason success. Lamar Jackson is going to win his second NFL MVP award in his 5 full seasons as a starting quarterback. That is ridiculous. That is something we have not often seen in the history of the NFL. It speaks to the talent at the quarterback position Lamar Jackson is. But in 2019, when he won the Most Valuable Player Award for the first time, the Baltimore Ravens were the number one seed in the AFC. They were bounced in the divisional round in their first playoff game at home by the Tennessee Titans. This year, as the one seed in the AFC, everything was there for them at home in the Charm City, the first time Baltimore had ever hosted an AFC championship game, and they were a 4.5-point favorite against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and they came up short. Those are going to be the things that define your career, whether fair or unfair. It is tied to the quarterback position. Did you lead your team to success, even as one individual player on a football field filled with 22 guys at any given time? It is how we define the quarterback position in the National Football League. And it is really interesting to look forward to next year already before we finish the final game of 2023, where the two teams now that will face off in Las Vegas in just over a week and a half are booked as the Super Bowl favorites entering next season. The Niners, the shortest price, plus +450. The Chiefs, a full $3 behind at plus +750. But Donnie, yesterday, the Ravens were in front of Kansas City, a 7-1 number. Now the flock moves back to 9-1. You might be asking yourself, why? Well, you look behind the Baltimore Ravens. The Lions were 17-1 yesterday. They have moved up by a full $5 to 12-1 as they retain Ben Johnson. And with two head coaching vacancies still out there, now it feels like it might be more of a certainty that Mike McDonald, the outstanding defensive coordinator for the flock these past two seasons, could take one of those head coaching jobs either in Washington or with the Seahawks.
Yeah, a little bit easier, obviously, to replace. And maybe Wink Martindale does go back to Baltimore when it's all said and done at that point here, if McDonald does move on. But the key contributor here in that whole equation is Ben Johnson staying with Detroit, because I thought they were going to just drop, not fall off the map, because they still have the semblance of a good team. And sometimes it takes a year or two after that coach leaves to really see the ill effects, because the game plan is in, a lot of the players will still be back, and they'll still be able to function and probably take a guy that's already in-house to try to improve it. You saw the Philadelphia Eagles do that when Steichen left, went with Brian Johnson. Things looked good for a while until the wheels fell off, and maybe that would have been the case. But I do think Detroit gets a big bump from yesterday. But those teams are supposed to be up top here because they're the last looks here. And also the Ravens, last year coming in as an 18-19-1 favorite to win the Super Bowl, they should be cut in half. They'll be a very good football team, but those questions will still chase Lamar Jackson in the Ravens when they make the playoffs next year. So I don't have many disagreements with that list here, taking a look from the FanDuel Sportsbook and where we think the Super Bowl odds should be next year, Ben.
So Donnie Wrightside, entering the 2023 NFL campaign, had an 18-1 number on the Ravens. Will DRS, entering the 2024 NFL campaign, have a 9-1 number on the Baltimore Ravens?
I mean, to be honest, the ticket was correct here, because the goal of sometimes taking a futures wager is not actually winning the Super Bowl. Because my thought process was, I want a team somewhere around 15-20-1 with a legitimate chance to make a deep postseason run and turn that ticket into money. There was a cash out available for my $100 ticket for $631 before that game started on Sunday. So theoretically, it was the right choice. I just thought they would advance to the Super Bowl. Push that cash out button at maybe 10, 11, or even 12-1 there. But next year, the Ravens will be right back in it. And if they're somewhere around 10-1, that's a pretty good price point to start with, because the Ravens, as long as they're healthy, they'll be formidable.
When you tie up your money in a futures market, you're hoping for profitability, maybe not even the ticket to cash in full. We end out the opening hour next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here to end out this opening hour on a Thursday, or a Wednesday, excuse me, on the early line on Sports Grid. I'm already looking forward to the weekend. That's because it's NHL All-Star Weekend, baby. Yeah, you might not have known that it's on the ice this weekend, All-Star Weekend in Toronto, I believe. That's where our guy, Ricky Horro, is going to be headed to. DRS and I will be taking in the NHL festivities for All-Star Weekend out in Las Vegas. Maybe we bet a couple of things while we sit in the sports books and gander at it all. So, Donnie, as we get ready for NHL All-Star Weekend, we look at the Stanley Cup odds here in 2023-24. The Colorado Avalanche, an 8-1 number, they are booked as the favorites. The Bruins have the best record in the Eastern Conference at this moment, 71 points. Boston has been dominant in the past two regular seasons. They have that third best price. And how about Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers? Plus 850 right now for Edmonton. They got off to an atrocious start this year. Now they have won 16 straight games. They're one win shy of the all-time NHL record. That would be 17 games, 17 wins in a row. The Oilers now second best number, plus 850.
Like, oh, let me start here, Ben. Like, we have a, you know, big four, like in the United States, right? In American sports betting, you know, the NFL, obviously get it. And the NHL probably coming in fourth. But did you just tell me there is a team in the NHL that's trying to win 17 games in a row? And I had no idea until you just told me that right now. Like, I don't know how that actually happens. And also, just to go back a little bit here, forget about the Stanley Cup ratings. There was a time in the 1980s that your boy DRS was a bigger NHL fan than NFL fan, and it wasn't even close because the Flyers were my heart growing up until I learned about the Buddy Ryan Eagles in the late 80s at this point. And the fact that I don't even watch the Flyers at all, but again, the Edmonton Oilers, one of the class franchises over the past 60 years in the NHL with those Gretzky-era teams, they're going to win 17 games. I had no idea that was even happening. That's a shame. Shame on me at this point here. What happened to NHL?
I don't know. But the Flyers 65-1. The Canucks have the best record out west. 20-1 to win the Stanley Cup. Hour two starts in 55 seconds.